Now a moment for reflection with Bruce Feiler. His books and TV shows and TED Talks and columns in the New York Times have helped us wrestle with religions. He walks readers through the Bible literally as he retraces the steps of biblical figures with fresh eyes. And now he's asking us to rethink Adam and Eve. Bruce says we've got them all wrong. Eve wasn't a lesser human made from Adam's rib to lure him to sin. There are no apples in Iraq where the story was set. The word fall isn't even in the Bible. No, Eve was cleaved from Adam's side, and Bruce says the story is about a great and equal marriage. His new book is The First Love Story, Adam, Eve, and Us. He joins us from Cake Mix Recording Studio in Dallas. Bruce Feiler, welcome back.
Nice to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, so what you do in this book is take a story that we think we know, pull a thread, it unravels, but suddenly we roll up a new ball of yarn with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, John Milton's Paradise Lost, Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel, Sissy Spacek and Carrie. We remember her mother screamed at her that Eve loosed a raven on the world, and the raven was sin, and the first sin was intercourse. You say Eve has been victim of the greatest character assassination in the world.
For me, Robin, as you know, my process begins at the kitchen table. I have a working wife. I have identical twin daughters. And we are just struggling on a daily basis to try to figure out the changing way that men and women are relating to each other. And this journey for me began on a visit to the Sistine Chapel with my daughters looking up at the ceiling and looking at Adam and God and saying, where am I in this picture? And I realized that one story, this story, has been at the heart of all these conversations about family and sexuality and gender identity for all these years. And when I kind of went back and started looking at it, I realized we've got the story wrong, that this story was weaponized as a way to elevate men and keep down women. And if we're going to have some meaning from the past in the middle of this conversation, we have to see the story for what it's really saying to us.
Yeah, I'm going to jump to the end because you go through so many rabbit holes. You mentioned the Sistine Chapel. Yes, there's the image we remember of God touching the outstretched finger of Adam. But Eve is there, tucked in under God's other arm. So she is there. But your point is your daughter's like, well, what does this mean for me? And I'm going to go to sort of the end of the story. You talk to relationship experts. You know, Eve may have been the first teacher, the first to have her eyes opened, and that Eve and Adam walk out of the garden equals.
What is powerful at the story is when you go back, you realize we have not really been reading the story. We've been hearing the layers of commentary that organized religion has been putting upon it. And when you go back to the story, there are two stories. First of all, the second story, as you know, has Adam being created from the earth, Eve being created from his body. It's not a rib. It's the side. Mm. You know, Eve going off and eating the fruit. It's the fruit of knowledge. You can call it a sin. You can call it discretion or whatever. But they still stay together. God blesses them. They have two children. That goes wrong. They have another, and that populates that child. Seth goes on to populate the human line. God needs this story to be a success, and it is a success. But when you go back to the beginning, to the first story in Genesis 1, God creates one human creation, divides it into male and female. The entire story begins with equality. And you say jumping to the end. Today, 30 centuries after the story was first written down, as men and women today stand equally before God. That was a hard-earned victory that involved going back and pulling apart the layers of kind of discrimination that were layered onto this story, going back to the original story where we can see equality, a seesawing of power, an equilibrium. That's what the story is trying to say to us.
As opposed to a treacherous, subservient woman. Look, there's so much here. Columbus believed in the Garden of Eden. He was searching for it. There was a famous German couple who went to the Galapagos to create their own Eden. That doesn't go well. But start with John Milton, because you say he did more than anyone to advance this theory that this is a love story about a compassionate marriage, which, you know, prior to this, that had been a crime in some places to actually love your wife. So what did Milton do?
I'm an experientialist, as you know. I like to go places. And one of the challenges is, where am I going to go, right? Because I can go to the Garden of Eden in Iraq, but that's really the only place to go. It turns out when I start tugging on strings, Robin, at every moment of transition in the family, people have gone back to the stories. Michelangelo, Milton, you mentioned Mary Shelley. So I got to go on this incredible scavenger hunt around the world. And in some ways, the most pivotal place was London. So it's here in the 17th century that John Milton, he goes and he gets married. He's a romantic. His wife, they go on their honeymoon. She goes back to visit her family, never returns again to her husband. It's an incredible story. He writes five tracts saying that divorce, which at the time was illegal, should be legal because how do you justify anything in 17th century? Go back to the Bible. Adam and Eve have a great marriage. They have apt and cheerful conversation. They are supportive. Late in his life, after kind of being exiled from the government, he goes and he writes Paradise Lost, which is a step-by-step argument that the two of them were in love. In effect, John Milton invents the idea of a love marriage. The two are together. They're cheerful. They're happy. They have wedded bliss. She goes off and eats the fruit and she says, "Oh, well, I should keep the power for myself. But I can't, so dear, I miss Adam." So she goes back, "Adam, he knows he should be dutiful, but oh, I love my wife." The two of them choose each other. It's an affirmative, powerful choice. And even though it's called Paradise Lost, when they leave, they are hand in hand toward a far happier place. He invents, elevates the story as the love story that it is.
Well, and there was thinking that the fall was actually God's plan, was a good thing because it gave humans something to overcome. You know, it sets that course. Look, you mentioned Adam and Eve as parents. They're parents who bear the death of a child at the hands of another son, Cain and Abel. You go off and meet one of the mothers of the Columbine shooters. You know, what must Eve have felt like to have a son who was murdered? And a son who was a murderer. You go to support groups for families of murdered children. You take us off on that tangent. You remind us what incredible parents they were. One of the saddest chapters, though, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, the suffragist, actually rewrote this story and the Bible during the early women's rights movement. And that was her fall and her fallout with Susan B. Anthony.
I love this story, and it's the story people have quoted most to me from the first love story. Eve, in many ways, is the primary actor in the story of Adam and Eve. And yet, for the first 28 centuries that people talked about it, only men talked about it publicly. As soon as women began to talk about it in the 19th century, our understanding of the story begins to change. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, in 1848, with Anthony, invents the women's rights movement. Basically, Stanton is the brains behind it, but she's got seven kids and a husband who's off. Anthony would come and say, "I need a speech." So Anthony's the public face. The two of them fight for women's rights in property, in custody, in voting, and they keep hitting a wall. What happens? People say, well, women can't have property rights because the Bible says Eve was created second, or women can't vote because the Bible says that Eve was created from Adam's rib. So Stanton decides that her biggest problem, and if women are ever going to have equality, they have to fight not politicians but preachers. And she needs to rewrite the story of Adam and Eve, and she does. In her 70s, in 1895, she publishes a book called The Woman's Bible that goes back to Genesis 1. And she says, look, here in Genesis 1, our Creator has male and female equal. That was the intention. The book is a landmark. It's a bestseller. It's a disaster. Essentially, the movement that she started gathers in Baltimore, takes a vote, and kicks her out. She's one of the most famous women in America. And we don't think of her today because she took on Adam and Eve and got flattened. It was another century until the second wave of feminism that we first understood her story and that women finally reclaimed the equality that is at the heart of the story itself.
I love that you tell that story now. Look, address the people, Bruce, who've been listening to us for several minutes now and saying, people, it's not true. You know, it's not, you don't really believe that, do you? What, you know, talk about your sense of, you know, how you accept these stories in the new form that you've created. You know, it's fairy tale to some, allegory to others. What is it to you?
I think of what the biblical archaeologist Avraham Biran, the first man to have a PhD in archaeology, said to me. He said, "I don't know if Adam and Eve existed then, but I know that they exist now. There they are in the Sistine Chapel, in Paradise Lost, in Mark Twain's vision, in Beyonce, in Pope Francis, 10 yards from where I stood to see him in Philadelphia."
Well, hold on. Mark Twain, Beyonce?
The Mark Twain story is amazing. He goes to Jerusalem and discovers Adam and has this emotional connection to his forefather, as he called him. He comes back. He tells the creators of the Statue of Liberty to replace Lady Liberty with Adam. Like, and when his wife dies, he writes the most beautiful passage. He has Adam say of his wife what Twain said of his: wherever Eve went, there was Eden. This story, at every moment in transition for the last 3,000 years, people have gone to find meaning in it. And what I'm saying, why it matters today, is that we're in another moment of transition in relationships and gender and sexuality and family. And look at the Bible, okay? Who are all the big figures? Noah, Abraham, Moses, Solomon, David, Jesus, Paul. They're all singles. Who is the first couple? It's Adam and Eve. Not Adam, not Eve. Adam and Eve. And it matters today when relationships have become a commodity, when we have reality television and tabloids, it matters that our first relationship be a success. There is promised love in the Bible as well as promised land. We need to remember Adam and Eve as the success that they are. They are the first love story.
That's Bruce Feiler. His new book is The First Love Story, Adam, Eve, and Us. You can read an excerpt at herenow.org. Bruce, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Robin.